Aegea. Episode 9, my friend. Welcome back. And welcome back to our listeners that are still hanging in there.
I don't know who they are, but didn't we talk about this already?
This was one of the infamous episodes that also got erased. So I'm really glad you're really remembering these things.
What a beginning. Okay. It's really an experiment in mental health.
This is all for the money. We're not doing this all for the money, guys. Not yet.
You got that right. Understatement of 2021. All right. I guess we did not talk about this because everything gets erased on this show.
Yes.
So, all right. Welcome back.
Welcome back. It's episode nine. All right, Mace. Sleep Time's Over, 1994, year in review, where we review every hip-hop album.
Yes,
that came out in 1994.
Like you said last week, most of them. No,
we're gonna mention them all. Every single damn one. You're not gonna review like an obscure Bay Area album you've never heard of, but we'll mention it in like episodes.
We'll just drop names. Don't worry,
we'll get to it. We're just. But today we're gonna talk about West Coast, Down South, and Midwest debut albums in part four of our Treasure or Trash series. And we did a lot of East Coast. You know, I would say that you and I both are probably East Coast fans in majority, right, of our hip-hop music.
I believe so.
I would say so.
Why not at this point?
But growing up, we listened to everything.
Yes.
And if you guys don't know, and if you're just tuning in for the first time, I don't know why you're tuning in on episode 9.
I really would like to know why.
I'm Sky Cameron, the sommelier to the stars. A.K.A. Rap Nerd. And I'm with Aaron Sakai. Fitness guru, DJ extraordinaire, you know, food critic.
Really?
Yeah.
You just throwing things out there?
Cultural critic, political liaison.
A liaison. I'm a guru and a liaison. Okay, let me tell you this. Let me make a message to you, anybody that's listening to this for the first time on episode 9. I don't know where you came from. I don't know how you stumbled upon this. And on the 9th one, hello. Hello to all of you. That's it. Welcome.
Well,
that's all I got.
We always speculate on how many episodes of this show we're actually going to have. We don't know. I mean, we haven't even got through a quarter of the albums. We're doing about 5 a show. So my guess is 30 plus episodes. If I have to be a betting man.
And I believe that.
Yeah.
I actually believe that, which is scary.
Yeah, it is scary. And there's a lot of classics that we haven't even touched on. But we're gonna go into our first album of the day. It's We Come Strapped. It was the debut solo album from MC8. Some of you guys may be wondering, MC8, he's been around? What are you talking about? This is the first album where he was actually MC8, not Compton's Most Wanted. So we want to point that out.
Correct.
And it was released July 19th, 1994 on Epic Street Records. And it was MC8 featuring CMW because he didn't want to, you know, alienate the Compton's Most Wanted fans. But it was just him.
Yes.
Yes. So his name is Aaron Tyler, a.k.a. MC8. His name 8 is E-I-H-T. And you know why the G isn't in that? In his name?
Go for it.
Because the G is in him. Hey.
Welcome.
I wish I had sound effects.
Episode 9.
Welcome. I wish I had my gunshot sound effects right
now. Yeah. That was fitting for this show. Just need one sound effect is the gunshot. All right.
But MC8 came up with his name because his name refers to two common items you'd find in the hood. Old English 800 malt liquor, the 8-ball, as they call it.
8-ball rolling.
And his favorite, the 38 caliber pistol.
As it should be. Yes. Exactly. St. Ides. Shout out to St. Ides. Shout out to St. Ides commercials. Was MC8 ever in a St. Ides commercial?
No, but he should have been, right?
I'm surprised he's not.
I think he was probably too gang affiliated to be in those commercials,
you
right?
You think so? I mean, is that really going to take it over the line for the St. Ides commercials? They had like Deadly Threat in one of them.
That's true.
Wasn't Cam
true.
In one of them?
Cam was
Isn't
in one.
Isn't Cam like Cam and killing Threat, somebody now?
But Cam and he should be.
He's shooting somebody now, probably. No, he's probably like a righteous guy now. Never mind. Sorry, Cam.
But
sorry.
Cam and Threat were basically like kind of Ice Cube proteges. MC8 was like like a real gang guy.
I guess
he was. He was one of the first guys that was really talking gang slang on.
I guess
on West Coast rap albums. Besides Ice-T, Ice-T was dropping a lot of gang slang.
Well, maybe because Ice Cube got the deal with St. Ives. That's how he put on Deadly Threat and Cam.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
they were all a part of Lynch Mob Camp, right?
That's probably it. All right.
But
solve that.
You know, MC8 fronted Compton's Most Wanted for three albums prior. Three albums that I argue he was. There were three for three on those.
They're
albums.
Great albums.
They're great albums. It's a Compton Thang, Straight Checking 'em, and Music to Drive By, which I've talked about on previous episodes in our 92. That I think is one of the best West Coast hip-hop albums of the 90s.
Yes.
But he was in the group with fellow members Boom Bam, Chill, DJ Slip, and DJ Mike T. So basically after those three albums were released, he got approached to do a song for the Menace of Society soundtrack and was in the movie.
He was in the movie.
I'm not sure if he took over the Tupac role. Oh, no. Tupac was supposed to be the Saphir role, I think, of the cousin that got shot in the carjacking scene.
Yes, correct.
But MC8 was like a kind of a sleeper hit in the movie, right? Everyone loved that character, right? Who got snaps on the Petro, right? Very memorable line.
Correct.
And he had the Straight Up Menace song, which actually went on to be a number one Billboard rap album hit, rap song hit.
That is correct.
And who knew that song would be so major, right? It was like a perfect timing with the movie.
Yeah.
So just asking you off the rip, are you more of a fan of Menace than Boys in the Hood?
See, everybody likes to have that discussion when they talk about Boys in the Hood.
I mean, we're talking about the two pinnacle hood movies, right?
But it seems like you're trying
you're a
to
New
be,
Jersey Drive guy.
As we all should. It's
juice. You're a juice guy.
Let me tell you something. Anybody
I like juice. Too.
Checking out episode 9 for the first time that doesn't know New Jersey Drive, they turn the thing off.
New Jersey Drive is a slept on movie. It's
10 people know that movie.
It's a dope movie.
10 people.
It's actually
know.
A good movie.
LL Scratch knows that movie. They're in that soundtrack. All right. People say Menace to Society all the time, and I think some of them say it to be cooler than you. They say it as like, because
it's a this, way more darker, more violent movie.
All this music shit discussion is always going to be like one-upping people. You're always trying to one-up somebody. Oh, you did? Did you know about this? Oh, you didn't? So then if somebody says they like Boys in the Hood, somebody's always going to come out
no,
and
the
be
the one-upper
like,
guy would be saying, I like South Central.
No one's saying that shit. They're saying, man,
you know what
is,
the argument was
that's
for
too
the
underground South
the
Central.
Latin movies, it was, would you like American Me or Blood In, Blood Out? That
it's
was
the same thing. So people are always going to try and one-up you and say Menace to Society. So if they truly are saying they like Menace to Society, so be it. I like Boys in the Hood. I think it was just an entertaining overall movie.
It's a more solid movie.
It's a more solid movie. I mean, wow. Menace to Society is great too.
Right.
But if Menace to Society and Boys in the Hood are both showing on TV
you're,
right
you're
now,
turning it on.
I turn Boys in the Hood.
Oh, shout out Singleton. Rest in peace, John Singleton.
I mean, it was a fun. I mean, both of them are dark, but it was a more entertaining. I don't even want to say fun, but had a lot of better lines in there. Lawrence Fishburne was good.
Yeah, Fishburne kind of steals the movie. Fishburne and Ice Cube kind of
steal
the movie.
Right.
They steal the movie.
So,
you got
I don't
a young,
know.
You got a young Morris
Cuba.
Chestnut in there.
Yeah, Cuba's in there. Morris is in there.
Cougany Jr. coming in the house, punching the air. He's so upset.
He was upset.
He was upset.
So.
And so much so that it was parodied, right, in Don't Be a Menace
it was
to South Central.
Parodied many. Many things of Cuba Gooding's life have been parodied. But that's nor here nor there. I go Boys in the Hood.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Well, do you remember picking up this album, We Come Strapped, when it came out?
Yes, this is a great album, yes.
Yeah, it was a really, and it was his biggest album still to date. It's MC8, it went gold at the time. Like, pretty critically acclaimed all around. You know, production was pretty much almost entirely handled by MC8 himself, DJ Slip, and one song from producer Rick Rock, which was Compton Bomb, which I'm playing right now. And this That's was right. probably the most like live instrumentation we had heard with MC8. So I think he took his music a lot more seriously with this album. It has more of a cinematic kind of feel to it, sonically. And he went for this more slower paced very dark cinematic feel to the album, so I appreciate that. They released two singles from the album, All For The Money, which we played, which has that great Tyrone Davis In The Mood sample, which Beatnuts and Redman also used, right?
Yes.
Beatnuts used it for Lick The P, and Redman used it for Da Bump. And then the second single was not as popular. It was G's Make the Hood Go Round.
Still a good song, though.
Good song, good song. You know. And MC8 is still one of the few West Coast rappers that East Coast guys really fuck with. They really like him. Producers like him. DJ Premier has been a big fan of him and been doing remixes for him since the early 90s.
Yeah.
And MC8 just came out with a new album last year, the Lessons album. And you got DJ Premier on it again. You got Conway the Machine. You got Benny the Butcher. You got all these Griselda guys, like... So you can see the East Coast has a lot of love for MC8, you know?
Because he's... What can you really say about him? I guess he's a legit guy.
He's a genuine dude. He seems like a
very genuine dude. And
he
that
seems like he lives
respect.
That life. He's definitely doesn't seem like a studio gangster.
He's not. Yes, he's a great term from back in the day. Studio gangster.
Studio gangster used quite a bit in the.
You know, speaking of terms,
lingo.
Back in the day, terms. You were called out for using the word biting. Last week.
Biting. You're a biter.
Like, what's up with this guy saying biting? Is this high school? I'm like, well, you know. He's got that mindset.
Do you think millennials know biting?
No, they do not. No. What would be the equivalent of millennials in biting? What would that be in 2021 instead of using the word biting? What would it be like? Right?
Yeah, I don't know.
When someone's faking or no, someone's biting means copying, right?
Right.
So what is someone doing to copy? Or maybe because everyone's copying everybody.
Hey,
it doesn't matter.
Look at that. Where's the rim shot? Which is true because everything sounds the same.
A
lot of the mainstream music sounds the same.
So maybe there is not a word for copying.
Oh God, we're gonna go on a grandpa rant again about mumble rap.
It's appropriate for this show.
It is.
So
it is two grumpy old men talking about 90s hip hop.
Shit.
Well, one of the major things that surrounded this album, as far as talk amongst rap writers at the time, was he actually had a really publicized beef with DJ Quick. Do you remember this? So
correct.
The opening track, Death Wish 3, is actually directed at DJ Quick. And from what I did the research, it seemed that Quick and MC8 have had a beef since 1990. So this thing was spanning years, and it was also because of their affiliations. DJ Quick is affiliated with the Bloods, MC8's affiliated with the Crips.
Right.
And DJ Quick supposedly put a diss out on his first mixtape before he ever had a record deal, and that's what sparked it. We never really heard DJ Quick really dissing MC8, did he? I mean,
no.
He made a couple jabs at him, but nothing like he did like for Everlast, right? Remember he did that song Can't Fuck With an End? Like, he came at Everlast, but he didn't really come at MC8.
That's right. I forgot about that, and he did not. There's nothing memorable about that I remember.
Right. So, anyways, I think this album is great. It holds up quite well. What did the source give this album in 1994?
Four mics.
They gave it four mics.
Because the quality is there.
And we didn't mention probably arguably the best song on the album, Nothing But the Gangsta. And this was kind of one of the major posse cuts at the time because you never really had West Coast and East Coast come together like this, right? MC8, right. Spice One, and Redman.
Right.
So
great song.
This was a great song. Even though it wasn't an official single, I threw this on mixtapes, and people loved it, and it just, to me, took his appeal even more so.
Well, the fact that Redman was on it was pretty
transcending,
because you didn't hear a really hardcore New York guy.
Right.
With
on
the gangster.
On too much West Coast stuff, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but what do you give this album then and now?
I give it the same.
You give
it's
it four,
still good.
Four mics then, four mics
it's
now.
It's a quality, mature album. It's a quality album that stands the test of time. The production's clean, matches his voice perfectly.
Yeah. I would say would you recommend this to a fan of someone who's not into gangster rap or not into West Coast hip-hop? I don't know if I'd go that far, though.
What's the age of that person?
Uh-huh, that's true.
Right?
Yeah.
What is true. West Coast gangster rap in 2021 to some 20-year-old?
It's probably like DJ Mustard kind of sounding stuff. It's a little bit faster paced. It's like a YG, right?
If somebody likes Kendrick Lamar, for example. You could give this to them and be like, hey, this is where Kendrick Lamar got his shit from. Something like that.
I can see. I would say more like J-Rock or Schoolboy.
Or J-Rock too, right?
But yeah. I definitely can see those comparisons. And I can definitely see the influence with someone like J-Rock, who raps at a little bit slower pace.
Right.
Who's a little bit more of a harder guy. But I agree with you. I think the album's Four Mics Then, Four Mics Now. My only complaint is, tonally, it's just a very slow album. So if you're looking for hype songs, guys, this is not the album. This is definitely the rolling in the car kind of album.
Well, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So moving on to our next album, I don't think we need to do a treasure trash on that because I think we both agree that it's a treasure album.
This is a solid album. I don't know anybody that'll disagree with that one. So.
Now we're gonna talk about this is a treasure trash album for sure, and I want to see, and it also features MC8. It's DFC, and the album is called Things in the Hood. This is the offshoot of MC Breed's group that he originally started back in the early 90s from Flint, Michigan.
Yes.
And the group is made up of Alpha Breed, Al Breed. This is MC Breed's first cousin.
Right.
And T-Dub. And do you remember what the DFC stood for in the acronym? It's not super original, but...
It's not a chicken company. It's got to be Detroit.
No.
D was not Detroit?
No,
it's probably something like some kind of slang word.
Right? Yeah, it's duh. Like,
I was gonna say duh. Yes.
Yeah, it's Da Funk Clan. Yeah, not the. I rather call them DFC than the Funk Clan, but that was the original name they came up with. And this debut album was released March 22nd, 1994, on Big Beat Atlantic Records. Do you remember this album?
I remember this album. Caps Get Peeled.
Caps Get Peeled was the single with MC8, so I figured we'd roll right into another MC8. This is a song that, you know, MC8 could probably could have kept for himself. This is a great beat. It has that great flow, but he gave it to DFC, and this is probably the song that most people, if they even know them, this song. If they even know them.
But people strangely know this song. I don't know why, because it sounds like a gangster song.
I think the single circulated, song. Though, right?
I heard it on radio. I heard it on Radio Free. I don't know if there was a video for this.
I don't remember a video. Do you remember the video? I think there was a video for this. And I think they did a video for Things in the Hood. They had a song with Nate Dogg. Do you remember
that's
that
right.
one?
Yes, right. That's right.
Right.
That's right.
So that was and then Warren G did the production. This is the remix. And this had a maxi single and a vinyl. And they were really promoting Warren G. So the group, a lot of people wondering, like, they had an all-star production team on here. You had Swift C from Rap-A-Lot.
Yes,
you had
I remember
MC
that.
Breed. You had DJ Slip and MC8 from Compton's Most Wanted. You had DOC and Warren G. And Warren G, you know, jumped on this kind of just post The Chronic.
Right.
And, I mean, pretty unbelievable when you look at the production roster on this. So I think where maybe Al Breed and T-Dub lack lyrically, I think the production actually makes up for it. The beats are quite good, but just these guys aren't they ain't reinventing the wheel with their
rap. Well, if MC Breed had a group home, this is MC Breed's group
home.
Oh,
what a great comparison. I love that comparison.
They sound like him. They sound kind of like him. Like they're related to him.
Right.
The
they
beats
rap in
are
the
good.
MC Breed style. Right.
And they're just rapping like MC Breed
but
style.
But they are living in the shadow of MC Breed.
Right. It's MC Breed's group home.
And I think that the reason why they got hooked up with DOC and Warren G is if you remember in 93, MC Breed did the album with Gotta Get Mine with Tupac.
Yeah.
And he had all those West Coast guys on it, right?
Yeah.
And so it was the New Breed album. And
right.
I think he probably just said, hey, work with my cousin on their
exactly.
album.
Exactly.
And they were signed to Big Beat Atlantic, so you know they had a budget.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And these guys, they even had a third single, which was Dig a Bigger Ditch. Dig a Bigger Ditch.
Play that one. I do not remember
okay.
that.
Okay, and even more surprising, they had a vinyl remix from the Beat Miners.
That's right.
Dude.
That's right.
So this is...
Okay, I remember this. Okay.
Yeah. So this was a super rare vinyl remix. I thought it was only for DJs, because I never saw it for sale.
I remember this. Wow.
Yeah.
I don't have this.
This was really hard to find. But...
Were you found this on YouTube?
This is YouTube.
Yeah, because iTunes not going to have this. Spotify maybe,
right.
but...
No, none of the remixes are available on any DSP, so you can't get them on any streaming service. But, you know, like, I think the remixes for the album are better than the album tracks.
Right.
You know, which is always a challenge in the 90s, right? Because then they could always go back, hindsight 2020, rework the songs. The remixes are better. Then they'll always trick you, play the remix on the video, you go and buy the album, and then you don't got the remix.
It was very half-ass marketing.
Yeah.
It was very not thought out. Rushing, getting it better, but too late, and then trying to revert into some strategy to sucker you in to get the album, which did not have, like you said. That happened a lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
So, you know, do you remember owning this album? I would probably say not, right? He had the single probably, right?
I had the singles.
I wouldn't. I'm not going to say you're missing much.
Well,
I mean,
quite frankly.
I mean, even listen to this song. This is past the Hooter. I don't know if the Hooter means the gun or the smoke or an actual breast.
Passing the breast. Getting back to chicken reference, maybe they're eating chicken and you're eating the breast. DFC.
But then when you got a Warren G song like this, the beat's not the greatest, and you got Warren G recycling his verse.
Right.
You know this verse,
that
right?
is correct, yes.
So, I mean, you could see...
That happened a lot, too, in the 90s.
You see these producers are kind of just giving guys not their best material, right?
Yeah.
So, it seems like more of a favor production, you know what I mean? Like, this is a favor to breed, maybe.
Okay, so, let's bring this up, because this is going to come up a lot, I think, as we progress with these 80 episodes. Why was it so prevalent in the mid-90s that a guy would rap on his own song, bunch of lyrics, and then he'd go on somebody else's song and rap the exact same lyrics that he did on his song? Why would no one catch and be like, why are you doing this?
Yeah, why are you rapping the same verse? Or
is it a discounted rate if you're rapping something from a song?
Yeah,
no one thought this
super
out?
Super interesting. Yeah.
Why?
You Many know, I also people think did that. We didn't have the internet, so I don't think people could really criticize.
So people tried to sneak around that.
And sneak around it. I mean, we've all heard guest verses where the guy recycles an old verse.
It happened a lot.
It happened a lot in the 90s, yeah.
And if you're a producer, are you telling me you're not upset by that? If you're the artist, right. You're not upset by that?
Right.
If you're not DFC, you're not upset.
That's
by
why
that?
I always appreciate Redman, because Redman did so many guest appearances on so many people's albums. He never recycled a verse.
No, he never did. But there's many who have. Snoop has done.
Yes.
Warren G, of course.
Yes.
But it's just strange that they would allow that, though. And was everything just so like lax that they're just like, we got Warren G on the song. It's all right. Fuck it.
They were like, in my opinion, they're probably in the studio and they're like, we'd like a Warren G verse. And Warren's like, I ain't going to write nothing for y'all. Here's the old
That's
verse.
Probably what he did.
I mean.
Which is crazy.
So the album wasn't a huge hit, but it sold decent enough copies for them to release, you know, future albums. I couldn't find the source reading on this album, but I would guess it's 3 mics. I would guess they probably gave it 3.
I was
just
gonna
for
say
production
like
alone.
3.5.
Maybe 3.5.
Because
of
the production.
Just for production at that time. So this is an album I'm on the fence about. I don't know if it's a treasure. I don't know if it's trash. I like songs on the album. I love Caps Get Peeled. You know, I like Things in the Hood remix, and I like the Dig a Bigger Ditch remix, but I don't...
Well...
But those are not on the album, so...
Then that sums it up. They're not on the album.
This is a rough one for me, so I think just barely. Do we have something just in the middle of trash and treasure?
Recyclables?
Recyclables.
I mean...
This is aluminum.
Yeah. It's a biodegradable. I'm going to say it's trash. I mean...
Yeah, there's nothing like super original.
There's nothing memorable
it.
On here. The beats are good.
Right. And then the best verse on the album, arguably, is MC8 on Caps Get Peeled.
Exactly.
Right?
So, we only know that song. And then it's basically MC Breed's cousins rhyming like MC Breed for the rest of the album.
Okay.
Do we really need to call that a treasure? Rest in peace, MC Breed.
MC Breed. All right. Moving on to an album that maybe a lot of people have never heard of.
Oh, shit.
And it's from Rap-A-Lot Records in 1994. It is the Black Monks. Do you remember the Black
God,
Monks?
Really? We're gonna
this
cover
is the
this.
Album called wow. Secrets of the Hidden Temple.
Oh, shit.
It was released September 13th, 1994 on Rap-A-Lot Records. It was the debut album of G-Funk-inspired trio Mr. 3-2, also known as Lord 3-2. He was formerly of the Convicts with Big Mike, rappers DA and AWOL. And production was handled by the Black Monks themselves with DJ Ready Red and iconic Houston producer John Beto. Beto One, as he's also known. So, what's your memories of this album. Like, I own this album. I bought it. Because I bought everything Rap-A-Lot.
You bought everything.
I love Rap-A-Lot.
You bought everything, period.
No, I love Rap-A-Lot, dude.
Well,
I'm going to be the biggest Rap-A-Lot promoter on this show.
Congratulations. I just, did not buy this. The ads turned me off.
Too gimmicky?
It looked too gimmicky. And I let it die.
But you see what they were trying to do, right? They were trying to do this G-Funk sound, but then like take Wu-Tang Clan imagery because they wanted the robes and the thing. And
it's marketing.
It's marketing.
It's all marketing. It's Rap-A-Lot's time to be like, okay, we're seeing all these guys making moves. Rap is making money right now. We got to get in on this now. What can we do? We got to diversify. This is one of the things. They tried to make a push.
I saw the music video on the box. I saw the music video.
I don't recall a video.
You don't remember that? Yeah.
I turned it off from the ads.
Well, this
the print ads I'm talking about, people. So, I mean, Odd Squad was cool, but these guys.
Odd Squad is awesome. We're going to be definitely talking about Odd Squad.
Odd Squad is a different realm, but when it got to this, I was just like, I checked out.
You felt it was too on the nose. It was too.
It was just a gimmicky thing. I didn't know if they were trying to be what. I didn't really know what the angle was.
This was the other single. It was Buddha Nature.
Of course. I mean.
Well, do you remember Lord 3-2? Do you remember 3-2 the rapper?
I remember that. I remember him, yes.
3-2 was a huge deal in Houston. If you're a Houston rap fan, Lord 3-2 was a huge deal. He originally founded the Convicts with Big Mike. Right?
Yes.
And the legend was, after that first album came out, Suge Knight actually flew them out to California and was actually trying to get them to sign a Death Row.
Right.
So they actually sat in on the early Chronic sessions, right? And they actually recorded a demo with Snoop and Warren G that's actually, you can hear on YouTube, called Playing for Keeps. I don't think they could get the contracts involved. Who knew, right? Who knew Death Row couldn't get contracts
Go figure.
Together? But they thought it was a good fit, right? The Convicts on Death Row, get it? I mean,
you got it out there, everyone?
That's what Shug thought, too.
Can we say that they're kind of biting?
But nothing happened. But the rumor mill was that basically they went back to Houston. Big Mike actually left the group, right, to join the Ghetto Boys.
Right.
Because Willie D left.
Right.
And then he recorded the album Till Death Do Us Part in 1993.
Yes.
And then Willie D would come back and rejoin in 96, kick Big Mike out again.
That's sad. That's unfortunate.
But yeah. Mr. 3-2 was left with, like, okay, should I start a solo career? But instead, he formed Black Monks.
Get the Monks ready.
With
yes.
DA and AWOL. And you can see he really went for that Chronic-esque sound.
They had to make a move.
So I felt like of the Rap-A-Lot albums that came out in this 93, 94... Like, this and Fifth War Boys, they had the most G-Funk-ish, like, stealing from that Dre sound.
Biting.
But I actually don't think it's terrible, though. Do you just find it generic?
It's not...
For you, just find it generic.
It's not awful. It's just... It's a sign of the times.
Right.
Rap-A-Lot was in a position where they're seeing all of these guys making money. Rap-A-Lot's been in this game for a while, years before 94, and they need to make a move, and they needed to make a push, and they needed to get themselves out there, and this was their attempt at diversifying and expansion. It doesn't go well all the time for companies, but it was their try.
At least Rap-A-Lot took chances. Odd Squad, Black Monks. I felt these were super ambitious groups to try to market in the 90s, right?
Part of their expansion.
Especially like Black Monks. You look at these songs. They have a song, Aggravated Monkeys, Zillion Ways to Die. Like,
well, right.
I guess Rumble in the Jungle, Buddha Nature.
Well, okay.
Doing it jungle style. Monks in the Jungle. I mean,
Monks in the Jungle,
they
right.
really went with it. They went with the theme.
Okay. When you think of Rap-A-Lot Records, Word Association, what do you think about?
Ghetto Boys.
Right? When you think of Ghetto Boys and their lyrics, they can get twisted. Scarface can say some shit. Bushwick Bill can say some shit.
Yep.
So they're all derivatives of the shit that they say, which is all like Zillion Ways to Die.
Right.
Black Monks.
Right, right, right.
Off the wall shit.
Yeah.
Odd Squad shit.
Yeah.
So it makes sense if you're a Ghetto Boys fan to follow along with these said groups.
Yeah, and Jay Prince, the the head of Rap-A-Lot, he don't want no one in Rap-A-Lot to sound the same, right?
Correct.
So that's the one genius thing. I still argue that Rap-A-Lot is the greatest South hip hop label of all time, and I still stand by that. Even though Cash Money No Limit, like
the all framework these guys, was there.
LaFace.
They created the framework for all these other labels. Right?
I think Rap-A-Lot has the most classic albums for me personally as a
quality
90s
yeah.
rap.
Oh yeah, yes. I don't disagree. It's just reasoning why they had to make a move, and right. this is their move. And either you dug it or you follow the Ghetto Boys along. If you're a fan of the Ghetto Boys, you guarantee probably bought this, right? 100% probably you bought this album.
Yeah, if you're a Rap-A-Lot, if you're a hardcore Rap-A-Lot fan, you bought the album. You know,
you're
what I mean?
In the Scarface.
The album
Bush
didn't
Lico.
Sell. You know, it didn't sell a lot of copies. I mean, and I think a lot of people looked at it. You like you. They looked at the album like, what is this?
What are they trying to do?
Right. What are they trying to do? And the videos were super weird. The Buddha Nature video was weird. The Secrets of the Hidden Temple
right.
videos were really weird. They really went for the monk theme a little too hard.
Trying but, too hard is a thing.
But the album, you know, it debuted 65 on the Billboard rap charts, but it sold huge in Houston. And
of course
I think that's
it
all it mattered. And Rap-A-Lot kept them on, and then they would release another album in 1998 before breaking up.
Because Houston takes care of Houston. The South takes care of the South.
Right.
New York don't take care of New York. It's all for one for all.
West Coast, yeah.
Bay Area takes care of themselves.
Yeah, it was funny. We had probably more fickle fans in the East Coast, right? They weren't as loyal as the South
East
fans.
East Coast fans were not as loyal. They always want shit for free.
Only as hot as your current song.
Bootlegging.
Oh, yeah, bootlegging.
I mean, you got the swap meets in California, but you got New York is not supportive of New York people.
Right.
Houston will go to your trunk.
Right, and I think
and
even in Michigan with DFC, it's probably right. huge locally because there weren't that many guys that
exactly.
actually get record labels out of Michigan.
Exactly. In New York, everybody's a rapper. Hey, man, I'm a rapper, so am I. And they're not going to buy it,
right.
and no one's going to buy it.
That's right. That's right.
And then ego gets in the way. So then there's that.
Well, I, you know, like, I got to say, I like this album better than DFC. I do enjoy this
album.
Well,
is that saying much?
I know,
really?
It's not saying much. But I also want to shout out Mr. 3-2 because, you know, he was shot and killed in Houston in 2016 at 44 years of age.
Rest in peace.
The guy, rest in peace for sure. He released 7 solo albums between 96 and 09, 2 albums with Black Monks, and 3 albums with Southside Players. This guy worked, and he's a Houston legend, so I just want to shout out him. If you guys ever get a chance to listen to his solo album, Wicked Buddha Baby, I highly recommend it. What do you think The Source gave this album in 94?
3.5.
They gave it 3.5 mics?
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Production sounds relevant to the time.
Yep.
And
you think they're going, because you think they're scoring them higher because they're trying something different?
They're trying something different. Matters for what it was at the time of the year. Rap-A-Lot's respected. Rap-A-Lot does not put out garbage.
Okay.
And a lot of that factored into whoever it was that reviewed this and gave it the mic rating that it did.
All right. So I agree. I don't know if I'm giving it 3.5, but I'll give it 3.5 just based on the fact that it was so outside the box for Houston rap at the time.
Yeah.
You know? And this was an album I tried forcing on friends, and they just were not.
They're still your friends?
They didn't want to hear it.
They still talk to you after that?
They didn't want to hear it.
Yeah.
So I would say production isn't as good as DFC's album, but the lyrical ability of these guys and the rapping is actually better. So, you know, I'm giving it a 3 back then, but I'm giving it a 3.5 now, just for
all right, that's
just
fair.
The fair that it like held up. So I'm going a very, very minor treasure on the 94.
I can't say anything about it because I didn't buy the album.
Yeah,
so
I
have to stay out of it. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna stay on the Rap-A-Lot theme because we are doing a lot of down south stuff. But this was a surprisingly big album coming from the South, and from it was the solo album from Big Mike.
All right.
It was the second half of the Convicts, and the album was called Something Serious. It was released June 28th, 1994 on Rap-A-Lot Records. I really call this album a sleeper because this album actually went gold, sold 500,000 copies in 1994,
yes.
And no one heard it.
Yes.
No one I knew heard it. I bought it. I loved it.
I bought this.
Oh, this album is... This album is way better than anyone remembers it to be.
Well, it's an album that you would see it. You were. It's either you knew about him or you didn't. It's either you knew he was Ghetto Boys affiliated or not.
Right.
And that's it. He has no single that's memorable. he has no real anything that's memorable, but people would buy it just because of the name recognition.
And I think Rap-A-Lot had a seal of approval, a stamp of approval as far as
you have
quality.
That. Right.
As the guys that were, I knew certain friends in school that if you're a Rap-A-Lot fan, you're a Rap-A-Lot fan. You pretty much buy almost anything.
You're going to buy it all, right.
Pretty much buy almost anything.
It's understandable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You remember how everyone was buying all the No Limit records? More robbed buying all the No Limit records.
Right.
And I went through a phase of buying quite a bit of No Limit records.
Because you just want the cover.
Cain and Abel. Yeah. And I had, I had Fiend.
Yeah, when are we going to review that shit? Oh, boy.
That's all late.
I got something to say.
Late 90s. All right. Oh, man. Those are rough albums, man.
Wow.
But, all right. This was the debut solo album of New Orleans rapper Michael Barnett, a.k.a. Big Mike, right?
Right.
And the album's production is pretty much the whole Rap-A-Lot camp's producing crew, right? It's N.O. Joe, Mike Dean, who would go on to work with Kanye West. He co-produces and plays music on all of Kanye West's like stuff going on from like Dark Twisted Fantasy and everything on from there. John Beato One, who also worked on the Black Monks album, and a young Pimp C of UGK on this album, and Crazy C. So the album would release three singles: World of Mine, which I'm playing right now, which was the only single from the album to crack the Billboard Rap Charts top 40 at number 39.
This cracked the 39?
At Billboard Rap Charts, number 39.
Oh, the Rap Charts, okay.
Rap Charts, not Pop Charts.
I'm thinking, wow, this is it.
And then the other single was a song with Pimp C called Havin' Thangs. I don't know if you remember that one.
I do not remember that.
It had a real, like funky beat that sounds like it would be a UGK song.
It does.
Right. Like almost that Tell Me Something Good kind of.
Right.
Right.
And I can just imagine, and there's the voice.
And there's Pimp C. So this was the only single that had a music video.
Okay.
And then there was another single for Creepin' and Rollin', which was had a remix.
I barely remember this.
Yeah. But, hey, it's Big Mike's biggest success for an album. He's never had another album go gold or going close to gold.
Right.
I mean, what do you think The Source gave this album in 94?
Four.
They gave it four mics and ranked it in their top 20 albums of 1994 over The Roots, which is nuts to me.
Well, once again,
what is happening?
It's the sign of the
times.
And
I love Big Mike. Shout out Big Mike. I love you, man, but come on.
It's the sign of the times. And plus, he went gold.
Wow.
He went gold. So you got to do it. I mean, I would like to see that top 20 list.
I'll send it to you.
Can we go over that list and see like
why? I'll send it to you. Well, when we do our top 10, I have the Source top 20. So when we eventually
top
10 albums, yeah, I wanted to compare and
see how
the Source ranked.
All right, fair enough.
I'm personally going, this album's a treasure. I'm giving it four mics then, four mics now. I think it's one of the best Rap-A-Lot albums as a whole of the 90s.
I think
this is better than the Ghetto Boys Till Death Do Us Part album, actually.
Oh, yeah. I give this over that easily.
And I just wish... I don't know if you remember, Big Mike in the late 90s, when Cash Money was coming out, he changed his rhyming style.
Yes.
He tried to go a little off-key, a little bit faster. And to me, he tried to go a little E-40-ish, a little off-beat, off... I just wasn't feeling it.
It did not work.
I
remember that.
I personally didn't care for it. All right, so we're going to go with that one as a treasure. And now another album that probably no one has heard of.
Wonderful.
Or maybe they have. It's the debut album of Long Beach rapper Little Half Dead.
Oh. Hey.
It was the album's called The Dead Has Arisen. It was released October 25th, 1994 on Priority Records.
Yep.
Long Beach rapper Donald Smith, a.k.a. Little Half Dead. Now, I always wondered where the hell that name came from. Little Half Dead, right?
And what's the story there?
He got his name from the character Half Dead in the black exploitation movie Penitentiary.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
So he was Little Half Dead.
Got it.
And... Where did anybody hear of the name Lil Half Dead? We all heard Snoop Dogg mention it in Little Ghetto Boy on The Chronic.
Yeah.
It was like the famous line, and we're always like, who's that guy? Who's Lil Half Dead?
One of the original Littles.
Yeah, Littles, one of the original Littles.
Taking over the world.
That's true.
The original Littles.
And Lil Half Dead was featured in all the liner notes on all the Death Row stuff, all the stuff. I would read all the liner notes. We talked about this. You'd read the liner notes.
Right. I think everyone that was into this would.
I always wanted to read the thank yous because then I always felt that you're going to find a group in there that you never heard of.
It'd be interesting to see who they thank, though, you know?
And, but they kept mentioning this guy in 92, 93, and then never heard of him. And then he just came out with an album. No single prior, no guest appearances on any other record, remember?
Not the best marketing. Yeah.
Where did this guy come from?
He just said, fuck it, I'm just going to put this out.
And then do you remember the cover of the album? It was half of his face is a skull.
Yes.
And the other half is his face.
I think everyone listening to this is going to remember that, I think.
Now, actually, I ran into some people in Hawaii that knew this album. Did you know this album?
I know this album.
Only because I think they were such big fans of West Coast Chronic and they wanted more of that West Coast sound.
I guess, but it was in the magazines.
Yeah, there was a music video.
Yeah, if you're reading the magazines, you're going to know about this. That's all we had back then. Right. So, if you're into it in 94, you're going to know a little half that is.
Now, I'm going to go and say, the star of the album is not really, you know, Lil Half Dead's rapping, which is fine. It's whatever. He's not, you know, he's not doing anything extraordinary here. But Total Track Productions, Courtney Branch and Tracy Kendrick, these are seasoned LA producers who, you know, prior to this, working with DJ Quick, AMG, Second to None.
Right.
They did LA Dream Team, Arabian Prince. They've been around a super long time. This production on this album is way better than it has any business being as well. Like, I'm going to play a couple tracks, but all like live instruments, you know, like not a ton of samples, little drum machines, but they got like live instrumentation.
And this classic sample here that's being used. He put it out there. He put it out there and said, fuck it. That's basically what happened to this. Because this is quality West Coast.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's one of the better West Coast albums of the 90s no one talked about.
They know of the name, but they don't know the album.
Right.
They've heard of the name.
You know what I think the problem was? He was signed to Priority. This was released October 25th on Priority Records. Priority just didn't have the marketing dollars for a lot of guys sometimes.
Oh, clearly. Right. Right. They blew it on a lot of...
Right. We can talk about, we can have a whole episode on Priority blowing it for a lot of guys.
A lot. But that's probably what happened. In fact, it is what happened. It didn't make money. If this had the good marketing back from like a Death Row, things would have changed. Definitely.
This was the second single, 12-Pack of Doja, featuring Hostile. They also had a music video for this. I'm telling you, this album is a solid gangster rap. If you like West Coast gangster rap, this is a solid...
You need to know about this album.
It's a solid album. I mean, but like, if you want those kind of like Ice Cube, Warren G, QD3-esque beats, I mean, this got a little bit of everything.
Right.
And I'm not going to play it, but this album also has one of the funniest rap skits of any West Coast album. They have a skit called Play 'Em or Spray 'Em, where they have a gangster rap call-in show where guys call in on the radio show, play their rap song, right? And it's Play 'Em or Spray 'Em. If the song is whack, then they shoot and kill the guys.
I like it.
And then they play all of these like generic sounding songs that like kind of the style that everyone's fighting. So I think it's
I think it's
a genius sketch. I think it's a genius sketch. It's worth listening to Play 'Em or Spray 'Em on
that
the
alone
Lil
is worth checking out.
Yeah. So
okay.
Anyways, The Source did not review this album.
Yeah.
Did you own this album or just heard the singles?
I heard the singles. I didn't have the album.
All right. But you had nothing bad to say about it.
No,
right?
Not at all.
Yeah. So it sold enough copies for Priority to release his sophomore album, Steel on a Mission, in 96, and another album, Dead Serious, in 2012. But other than that, he disappeared.
Right.
I guess Half Dead went full
dead. He went full dead. He's dead. Just call him as you see it.
But I'm going to go... I give the album 4 mics back in the day because I love this album.
Yeah.
And I thought it was one of those if you know, you know albums.
Yeah.
But I'm giving it 3.5 now just because I get it. It's, you know, it's the gangsta lyrics get a little repetitive, but overall musically it's an awesome album. So
musically it sounds great.
I'll give it 3.5.
Yeah.
I'll give it 3.5 now.
I can stand by that. I see what you're saying.
All right. We're at 44 minutes. Where it did 5 albums.
That's fantastic.
Should we end it here? Why don't we talk about what's going on? What else is going on in your personal life? Or what else is going on with the other show?
Well, I haven't shaved yet. Okay. Oh, we're talking about the personal
shout out to your co-host Summer, who's great.
All right, so yeah, people listening on this show, good luck. But there's another show that comes on Friday. This show comes out on Thursdays,
right?
Because of the Throwback Thursday thing. Right. Fitness shows on Friday.
Right.
That's did the first live show.
Yeah.
In like a year.
Right.
So we got to test out the audience of one, and I think it's gonna work if we eventually do live shows again.
Right.
So we have a camera on the lucky audience.
Was that
of
the
one
you guys did at the gym?
Yeah.
Right.
So it's gonna come out this week. We released this show Thursday. Sky, you're doing the editing now. So Sky,
well,
no pressure.
Guys, if you hate the way this show sounds, it's all me.
Sky Cameron at Yahoo.
What a Yahoo.
So that's Thursday. You're gonna have that show coming out Friday, and that's the IG Lives are weekly now. Every Wednesday. We got the Valentine show coming up.
That's
this
right.
Sunday. The anti-Valentine show.
Right.
We're supposed to have local MILF, but go and figure, the boyfriend surprised her with dinner.
Oh.
So, okay. You know, all these frickers.
So you're not getting another MILF?
I'm sure that... MILFs out there.
MILFs are plenty.
First of all, if you're a MILF listening to this, really tell us who you are, because I don't believe it.
Yeah.
And then second of all, yes, I got other guests that I'm going to...
Well,
put out there for Sunday.
That's your local MILF. Can you get your mainland MILF for somebody else?
Can we get something from Compton? Maybe? Little Half Dead, if you're slow eyed.
Little Half Dead, yeah.
You got it. You know a MILF?
Little Half MILF.
I mean, I'm sure there's a half MILF somewhere around here. So that's
coming
MILF.
Up Sunday. Sorry, man. I'm here all week.
That's it.
Tip
that's
your waitresses.
That's it. Time to say goodnight at that point.
Hey,
that's
baby.
It.
I don't know, man. But I just got to say, I'm enjoying the F is for Fitness show. You guys always make me feel unhealthy. <You know? laughs> make me feel I'm not doing enough with my life. But a lot of great tips on there. You guys really do good. And, I don't know if we're going to have a lot of crossover with the fitness show and our 90s hip-hop show. But if we can get any crossover, I hope there is some.
Well, isn't it my ass that's the crossover, really?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't it just
they're going to follow you, whatever you
ranting
do,
or whatever the hell I'm saying. Yeah.
Right.
But either way,
follow this into Aaron's mukbang show.
Yeah, get ready for that, everyone. Yeah, an audio mukbang. Get ready for that. Audio-only mukbang. Does that make you want to tune
black
in?
Black monks in the background.
Does that make you want to tune in, episode 10? All right, well.
Mukbang. Sorry, guys.
Wow.
I'm on a roll here,
wow.
Guys. I'm on a roll.
The milk one was good. The half milk. Yeah. What did you say?
Skim milk.
Skim milk. That was... Sky Cameron at yahoo.com, everyone.
Yeah.
So, how many albums have we, before we signing off, how many albums have we covered so far here?
Okay, so if I had to guess, we are approaching close to 50 albums we've did
Jesus
so far. Close to
Christ.
This. Yeah.
All right. How many do we have left? Do we have an idea? Do we have any inkling of how many we have left here?
100. There was 150 albums that I could find that were released on fairly legitimate record labels.
Fairly legitimate?
Yes. You know, we got to mention the albums on Ichiban Records, right?
All right, yeah, shout out Ichiban Records.
Right. But all right. But you know, you guys want the most complete show. You know, this is it.
Yeah.
This is it. You can't say that we're not complete.
Right. No one can complain
complete
here.
Complete assholes.
Yeah. And no one can complain that nothing was not covered.
Right? No.
There's no way.
I mean, I would really love it if someone hits me with something that I missed. But, you know, I'm open. I'm definitely open for it.
Okay, let's put this out here.
Right.
Being at the end of the show, there's the Easter egg for today's show.
Okay.
If you are going to go and listen to this whole thing, message someone here and say that, I bet I could find you another album that you can't find, that you didn't know about. Try to message us something saying that you think you can one-up
this. I would say name your most obscure album and
something
make
like
sure
that,
it's released in 1994 and make sure that it wasn't just, you know, burned in someone's bedroom and passed out. Like, it has to be distributed into, like, Tower Records or Jelly's. Like, it had to be an album that was released, right? So,
okay,
you
people.
Know,
there you go.
Even Bay
assignment.
Area hip-hop, I got all that stuff.
There's your assignment,
all the
people.
Get Low Records, all the Sick With It Records. Like, I mean, I did the research, guys. I really
enjoy.
Did the research.
Yes. Yeah,
for better or worse, I did all the research.
Got that right.
Yes.
So
I've absorbed so much hip-hop information, I I forgot everyone's birthday. I don't know anyone's birthday anymore.
I
forgot some members of my family.
It's 2021. It doesn't matter. It's all moot. Well, so it's fine.
Yep.
Yeah, let's just get out a little.
Yep. Yeah. But anyways, I want to say appreciate you, Aaron. Thank you for putting up with this show. Thank you for always going back and digging into that dungeon of information you have. That dank, black monk dungeon.
Yeah, it's getting really scary down there.
Right,
so,
Hidden Temple.
You
got the secrets of the Hidden Temple. That should have been your album.
I show. And what secrets they are.
All anyways, right. We appreciate you guys.
Thank you.
We'll see
Sky.
You for another one.
Thank
Peace.
You, everyone.